Hello, and welcome to Tell the Damn Story with veteran award-winning authors Alex Simmons and Chris Ryan. On Tell the Damn Story, we celebrate the trials and tribulations, the challenges and joys of creativity, and hopefully, along the way, help you tell your own damn stories. And here we are on episode 4,569.
Something close
hello,
to that.
Hello, Alex.
hello there, Christopher. How are you, fella? How are you? How you been?
Good. Had a little adventure. On September 28th or so, my stomach exploded, and it was fantastic.
Ouch.
Burst into flames. Long story short, it was an ulcer that apparently I'd been working on for 4 years.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, a little medication and little change of dietary habits. I went from 100% pain to, I don't know, 0.001.
I like that.
So I'm in good shape now.
Yeah, right.
And,
nobody hit you in the stomach, though.
No, this was, she says this is stress. It's got all the kill through. And, you know, I retired from school, so I was like, she's like, that's a good step forward.
Yeah, let's de-stress as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been walking and reading and writing.
Okay.
And, eating healthy. And apparently that's all you need in life. There you go.
That's so they tell me.
How about you?
Oh, me. I've been teaching. Oddly enough, there are a couple of people working on some documentaries, and I've been involved in that. I'll go into more detail on that maybe around November. I'll talk a little bit more about that.
Spoilers, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care what he says. I'm going to tell you. He's working on the history of air.
Yeah. A lot of hot air. Yeah. Anyway, there's that. And then there's a couple of writing projects that I'm working on. I've been teaching at the New York Film Academy and got a good group of students in this time. It is very refreshing to talk with 20-something-year-olds, and I mean the young end of 20-something-year-olds, and they've seen some of the classic films. They know some of the classic
plays and books
and things. That's really very reassuring. Because a bunch of folks like us keep saying, oh, the young people don't know this. No, trust me.
Not me.
Yeah, they're more clued in than you might think. So that's been fun. That's what I've been up to.
And if we're honest with our audience, we also did a special project that is in the can and will be our gift to you this Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
You got to wait a little while. It's about 6 weeks away.
Yeah, 6 weeks.
I mean, we might be, you know, we could be dropping hints, you know. I'm not sure, but, you know, sometimes you can pick up on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a clue here or there, yes.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm saying maybe. But, ladies and gentlemen, a very special episode of Tell the Damn Story for your Thanksgiving break. We're gonna be in direct competition with my favorite Marvel character, Hawkeye, who is releasing 2 episodes on Thanksgiving weekend. So as long as we don't go live with it on November 24th, we'll be okay.
We'll be good, yes. Isn't that a Tuesday?
Everyone in the right-thinking world will be watching Hawkeye. That's what I'm saying. All right, ladies and gents.
So since I said something about my students, and he's talking about right thinking, and I think he meant R-I-G-H-T, but I'm thinking R-I-T-E. Our topic for this afternoon, this evening, whenever it is you're listening to this, is actually
Watching on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that's possible that you might actually be staring at our wonderful countenance at that time. But
looking
we want to talk about, I'm going to hurt you in a minute. We're talking about, because obviously he's got what I'm about to say. He's got this thing, but we're talking about what happens when you have a lack of confidence in your writing or in even the effort to start to explore, a writing career or an interest, a strong interest or passion about writing. But you don't think you can do it. You're thinking somehow, some way, that you're just not equipped before that you could never pull off this particular story, or things like that. How does lack of confidence impact on one's writing skills, around one's writing experience? So, Chris, you wanna start off on that?
I'll just say that I grew up in a home that spent a lot of energy tearing up confidence. So I have some experience here. You know, and I grew up in a neighborhood. Not all parts of the Bronx was like this, but, you know, my neighborhood was. If you showed any kind of inclination to want to be, you know, whether it was art or whether it was music or writing or whatever, you know, people would look askance, and then, you know, then the mocking would begin. That all adds to, and, you know, the look of, what did this weirdo do, you know, when you create something in your home?
Because you weren't doing the cool stuff, right?
Well, I mean, you don't know. When you're a kid, you're just writing stuff down or painting or drawing. You just, and then you show someone and they go, then you're just shattered, right? You're like, what the hell? Maybe I am the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But experience of other parts, you know, of the world, as close as the next neighborhood or Manhattan or, you know, upstate New York or now in Jersey, and you see other people accept it, other people understand that's a way some people live, and you start separating the negative from the positive and give yourself a chance. Therapy also helps.
Well, I'll just quickly jump in and say, ooh, you okay, buddy? Need some water? Agua?
Yeah, I think it's the full. It's just like the full.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, I had a situation where, you know, my mom's was she did not, you know, knock any of my craziness and my obsession with comics and things like that, or my drawing, or my making up stories and writing stories and doing things with my action figures. She was never anti that stuff. But at the same time, I didn't have a lot of friends who were into it initially. And then when I finally found a couple of buddies, my friend Michael and my friend Angelo, we had to keep it on the down low. So we would be, you know, we'd be sharing comic books together. We'd be sharing some stories together. In junior high, high school, junior high mainly, we had costumes, and we would go into the park with a friend of Michael's who had a camera, and we would shoot Batman and Robin stuff. And we would, again, only the immediate family would know about this stuff, and we would share these kind of stories with them. And that's, it does play with you as you're growing up. There's a certain part of you that goes, I cannot shine. I cannot show my, you don't even use the word creativity, but you can't show how your head works, how these thoughts flow through your mind and all that kind of stuff. And that does hold you back. Instead of exploring from an early age those possibilities, you're suppressed, or you're compressing them and keeping them quiet. And so you I'm going to use the word blossom. Maybe you blossom. You start to sort of peek out and start to explore these things and start to stand up for yourself at a later time. But the idea is that you need to do that. So, like I was saying, therapy, for some people it'll be therapy. Right. For others, it'll be connecting with good people that do get it. You know,
I think you have to find your tribe. Mm. And that's the lesson I learned really late in life. But, you know, whoever's listening to this, you don't have to be a certain age to go and find your tribe, you know. It doesn't, you know, there's no federal law saying that, well, I live on this block, so these are the people that are my friends forever. That's, you know,
but it is key though. And we're talking younger initially in those younger years and those teen years or those adolescent years when you feel like you're all alone. You're not,
right.
You may be considered by some the weird one, but no, you're the creative one. And I'm not going to go all kumbaya on you. I'm simply going to say you've just got to hold on and hang in there and try not to squash that creative side.
Well, social media can help you. I mean, a lot of people times social media is just a beast, you know. But if you carefully curate your social media to create an artist community, you know, say you like to paint, search, you know, hashtag painters, search, mm-hmm. you know.
And there are groups. And
I find social media is a lot more rewarding now that I've kind of unfollowed a lot of people who were just fire and brimstone about, I don't know, whatever was ticking them off that day. Mm. And carefully, especially with Twitter, I carefully curate a writer's community. And every once in a while, you get someone who's just goofy. And you hit unfollow. Because
that switch does work. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you can find you can create a positive experience on those things. And hey, you know, it is what it is, bro.
I think, again, for the older crowd, I would also say that, you know, and I say this a lot to my students, don't judge. Don't judge your work. Don't judge your ideas. Don't beat yourself down at the very beginning of the process of creating something. Don't assume like, oh, I had this idea. It's got to be stupid. It's going to be weird. It's going to be people are going to.
Well,
don't do that.
When you're ready, I want to talk about that for a little bit.
Okay. Okay.
Keep going if you want.
I was simply setting that up. So go ahead.
Oh, beautiful. Well, I would posit this theory. How's that?
Yes, doctor. What theory would you like to posit? Yes.
I think there's a writing cycle, you know, and it starts with some kind of inspiration. It doesn't have to be the entire story. Sometimes it's a prompt, and sometimes it's a character, and sometimes it's a situation, and on you go. But you brainstorm, you take notes, all that stuff, and then you start writing. And there's a certain point in the cycle of writing. You know, in a washing machine, it's, you know, wash, rinse, you know, spin, right?
Don't forget
there's
spin,
There's the suck part of the writer's cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's when, for some, you know, usually creeps up on you as a creator, where you suddenly realize, and it's never you think, you realize, because it feels like fact to you, oh, this sucks, and I suck, and I should not be allowed near words, you know? And I think the best service we can do is point that out for other creatives and say, yeah, it happens to us too.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the cycle. It's really a disguised message from your editor, you know, not the outside guy who you know, gets a salary or girl. It's your interior editor that, you know, wants you to reread your story or take a walk and come back to it, let your thoughts refresh. But you just have to tell, okay, either tell me what the problem is or go away. And
notice he's flicking off the shoulder there, right? Yeah.
It happened to me last night. I was watching, here's another foreshadowing. I was watching the Horror Writers Association New York's show Galactic Terrors, which is on YouTube. And you get a couple of people read from their writing. And it's really a cool show, Galactic Terrors. Check it out on YouTube. And last night, my energy was running down, and I've been going to green tea lately, which really mellows me out. So I'm in the middle of my cup of green tea, and my wife goes, "You got 2 minutes before Galactic Terror goes on," because I like to watch it live. Mm-hmm. Like, oh. So I come in and I was really just kind of mellow, and everybody who was on is more accomplished than I am. So when your energy is low and you make that observation, you have set yourself up for the suck cycle. And so I'm watching and I'm enjoying the stories, but you know, and that little part is in my ear, and I just kept dismissing it and focusing on the stories and that kind of stuff. And when I was done, I was just like, "Oh man." And I went, "Oh man, shut up, go to bed." And this morning, having gone to sleep like that, you know, like, you know, you really, you know, you got to get better, faster, higher, you know.
Yeah. Bionic.
I woke up about 4 o'clock this morning. And all I wanted to do was grab the laptop, and it was really productive. I probably went through about 10 pages. They were, I had dictated them. So it was, you know, turning mush into story and then going back and tightening and creating tension, but it was very, very productive, and suck cycle has ended. And what I'm trying to offer is that that's just part of the process. Trust the process. Work through the suck cycle, accept it and acknowledge it for what it is, part of the process. If you never think you suck, you're going to put out work that's not polished.
Mm. Mm.
So what do you think about that, Alex Simmons, creator of Blackjack?
Yeah, I've heard about that character. I would just simply say, just a little button to this particular segment, is A, I agree, Chris, and B, what I was talking about in that particular part about judging is, again, for those people who immediately upon having an idea, assume the negative. And I'm just saying, give yourself a chance. I've now found a fond reference here. I tend to say it's sort of like, you know, getting a newborn baby and going, "Oh, it can't walk. Give it back." You know, that doesn't quite work. You got to give it time to develop. So you have ideas. Don't judge them. Just put them down digitally or, you know, handwrite them, and you can step away from and come back and look at them, you know, a day later, a month later, a year later, whatever. But the idea is get them down, because some of them will be the pearls from which you will string a wonderful necklace. Okay. So let us.
One last thing.
Okay. Stephen one King last thing.
And if I do it just right, there, my glasses look like the logo for the Hawkeye series. Just saying.
or Bullseye, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. See how we did that?
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen King says that, and it's an alternative way, so whatever works for you. This is one of the best way to immortalize bad ideas is to write them all down immediately. He says, leave them in your head and let those suckers fight it out. And the one and the one that climbs to the top and keeps tapping you, that's the one. So I think that's a pretty interesting way of thinking about it.
Well, now, the interesting is that, you know, writing and writing coaching and writing teaching and all of that is really like picking tools for your own tool belt. So whatever one of those suggestions works for you, go for it. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I said, there you go then.
Ah, there you go. All right. So let's just assume here that we've got we understand that something that we create is possibly, probably, definitely going to suck at some point, but that we can work through it. So where do we go for ideas?
Suckless.
Yeah, suckless. Yes, it's a small town just outside of Naval Lynn.
Just make it suck less. It's called rewriting.
Yes, there you go. But anyway, so as I was saying, so where do you go for the ideas, and the ideas that you're going to consider for stories? And sometimes people are
Amazon.
Thinking, yeah, oh, I'm going to hurt you. Sometimes people are thinking, I got to come up with something absolutely original, something I got to make up completely out of my head with no small bricks to work with, no starting place whatsoever except pure air. And I think one of the places that you can go, and actually for emerging writers is a good place to start as a springboard, is your own life experiences, points of view and beliefs, to go inward for at least an inspiration for the thing that you might want to write about. I have a little bit of a quick story about that. I have a number of students who come to the screenwriting classes and some of the private sessions that I do, and they want to write a story, and they have an idea for a story, or they have a couple of ideas for stories, and they start, you know, describing them everything, and they're they're really a sort of more extravagant version of something we've already seen, something that they like, a movie that they've seen, a TV show, or some characters that they like. And as they explore it or expand on it, it's really they're regurgitating what they've seen. And so I always, instead of saying, you know, no, it's not a good idea, I always say, okay, why? Why this character? Why does this character do that? Why does this character say that? Why did this character come from such and such? And as they dig a little deeper into their reasoning, which sometimes they don't have initially because they were just regurgitating, but then as they start to answer the questions, they start to go to an original place. And that's a good place to be, again, as a young writer, but even as an established writer. Sometimes going to the things you're familiar with, the things that you have strong feelings about, the things that you have some opinion about or you're curious about, that's a good place to go for material because, A, you're going to be more passionate about it. You're likely to be more passionate about it. But then the other thing is that in writing the characters as they're going through whatever the story is, you have some form of a personal experience that you can pull from, some emotional connection or some visual references. So I think that that's a good place to go, is to go back to yourself first. What were you going to say about that?
Well, I mean, at some point early on, we all do that thing where we've come up with this great story and we write it out and all that sort of stuff. And when we reread it, we're like, wait a second. That sounds familiar, right?
Yeah.
I mean, my first novel was a complete cover-to-cover ripoff of S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders.
Oh.
You know, I had just read it in like 7th or 8th grade, got really excited, ran out, took a notebook, I'm writing my own version, and I've come to look upon that as an exercise where you put it in the drawer and no one ever sees it again. But you have written an extended idea, you know, so don't beat yourself up if you find out, you know, I mean, if we think about it, there are those kind of things everywhere.
Oh,
you
know, and Dune, some of them people got paid to do. Yes.
Well, you know, Dune is coming out and I was watching Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin's YouTube show, Fat Man Beyond. And they were talking about Dune. They had seen Dune in 4D. And he was talking about, the idea of the sand planet and the young boy, you know, who goes through heartache and has to become a leader. And he was like, man, Frank Herbert kind of owes George Lucas a paycheck. It's just like Star Wars. And Mark Bernardin says, Dune came out in 67.
Yeah.
And Kevin Smith thinks for him and he goes, George Lucas owes Frank Herbert a paycheck.
One of my students did the exact same thing with, I was showing them a Laurel and Hardy short film, The Piano Movers. And they're watching this, you know, it was all about comedy and beats and things like that. And they're watching this. And
Laurel and Hardy, right?
Yeah.
That's
Laurel
one of my
and
favorites.
Hardy.
Yeah.
Right. And some of the kids jumped up with, oh, man, they stole that from Dumb and Dumber. And I went, break on. I'm sorry, guys. When did we determine this film was made?
Right.
And when was Dumb and Dumber made? Oh, and it was just like the scene you just described.
Yeah,
just
it was,
like that
it's
scene.
An homage. Yeah, it's an homage. If you listen carefully to a Bruce Springsteen song, Racing in the Streets off Born to Run, immediately after listening to Martha and the Vandellas Dancing in the Streets, you'll be suddenly overcome with, that's just Martha really slowed down. I don't know. I'm not casting aspersions. But now that is not to say that it's something that we should seek to do. You know, Child's Play is really a trilogy of terror. It's the same story. That's not the way to go. The way to go is to, if you see it, okay, where can I put myself into it? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I was listening to one of the writers last night on Galactic Terra, and he was saying, well, you know, what I really like to do is I might want to write about something that I'm a fan of, you know, maybe vampires. But what would it be like, vampires in the desert, you know, or this, you know, and then you're starting to create something new, you know, and because you adjusted, the old tropes have to adjust with it, have to evolve with it. And that's how you refresh something. And then you're starting to make it your own. Now, how do you do that? Pulling from your own life without just writing memoir or autobiography. How do you do that?
Well, I think that, again, to be clear, if you wanted to do a story about, let's say, a man who, and I'm going to pull this from one of the class experiences. I had a student who was very fond of doing hitman stories. I mean, he not the character hitman, which the video game is, but he liked to come up with stories that were basically a hitman for the mob and blah, blah, blah. And usually, you know, the brother, there were two brothers who were hits or whatever. So I said, okay, everything that you've set up at this point, where as we discussed it and I asked questions, you figured out was, you know, you got this from this film or you were influenced by such and such. So let's go back and let's look at this. This character, how did he become this hitman? How did he become involved in the mob? And said, well, you know, his neighborhood and blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. And do you have any references? Did you do any research on the neighborhood and the upbringing? He said, oh, well, I live in such and such in my neighborhood. I said, oh, okay. So then let me explore your childhood for a little bit. Let me explore your experience of the neighborhood and what kind of things happen. And so when you get him to go back, in this case, get him to go back to his experiences, all right, and then obviously he didn't become a hitman, at least not that I'm aware of. So, keep that on the down low. But
author, hitman.
Yeah, in looking at what happened to him or some of his friends at that time period in real life, he was able then to take some of that material and use it for his character, which then caused him to reconsider some of the twists and turns he was taking his character through. And it began to change some of the trajectory of the story. And he could write that. He could write some of the turmoil or confusion that his character went through in his younger years because he himself or one of his buddies had experienced X or Y. Right. So that's where I'm saying you can use that as a springboard for your fiction, as opposed to making it a memoir, you know, or doing nothing but memoirs.
Well, I'll give you another example of that. I wanted to write pure vengeance stories.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always old mob guys or, you know, veterans of the war, and, you know, cop who maybe drank too much and now he's seeking redemption. I don't want any of those.
Okay.
I want to ask, well, what would be a person or character furthest away from a Frank Castle, from a Punisher type character, you know, that we could still believably cast as a, you know, angel of vengeance type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Summer Olympics. And while it was in the back of my mind, I was watching the remember when you used to have words in your head?
Yeah, I was wondering. Pregnant
it's not
pause.
The acrobat, the gymnasts. The gymnasts.
Okay.
You know, the floor gymnasts and the and it was the female team that just lit it up for me because they tend to be really tiny and extraordinarily athletic
and powerful
and flexible and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you just add, you know, a reason why she would also be really adept at weapons. And you have a character that I've published with Shotgun Honey, just a small like the 700 worders on their website so far. And her name is Penelope, because Penelope as a name is as far from Frank Castle Punisher as you can get. So, and it, because of who and what she is, both physically and now her background has been filled out for me. I no longer think of any of those tropes or male cliches when I'm writing those stories, because I'm just, now I know Penelope. That's another exercise, is that, all right, I want to do this. I want to do a werewolf story, but I don't want to do a werewolf story like, you know, and all right, so where do you go?
Yeah. And, you know, and another thing,
write just, down the tropes and go away from them.
Yeah. You know? And you just mentioned the name thing too. And it's another thing too, because a lot of times students or some writers will go through multiple plot shifts and outlines, and even sometimes start off with a chapter or two and they have not named their character. And I always find that problematic, because a name is a part of the reality, is a part of making that character that someone that exists. And when you said Penelope is not a, you know, as far from as Frank Castle as possible, you're not only correct, but it also goes against some of the expectations of someone named Penelope. It's like, it's like a hit person named Ashley. You know, it's like, you know, we associate
Ashley Ann.
Yeah, we associate certain things with that. Yeah, serial killer. You know, so it's the names are things that can become an integral part of the character. And when we also look back to our own life experiences and the things we've seen and feel and believe, even sometimes we would name a character, like if someone, I had a situation where some of the students were talking about their religious, you know, upbringing, and naming certain characters with biblical names made that character more relevant for the story that they were working on. But they hadn't thought about that before, so they just come up with a name. That's an interesting mustache you've got there.
All right, thank you. Yeah. Those of you who are watching on YouTube, you just saw Silvio, who is the managing editor over here.
Yeah, right.
At, Seamus Annunzio Productions, and he wants to know why I'm not typing. But
that's right. And he keeps putting his tail up. Yeah. Okay.
I'll give you one other example from a story I recently submitted. I had originally written it for a Pink Floyd anthology, and it didn't. You know, it didn't. I didn't like the deal, so I pulled the story. And I rewrote it because, though I am quite Caucasian, I too can get upset by things. And the George Floyd murder and the stuff that I've learned since then. There's so much over the last couple of years that I learned that my white neighborhood never was exposed to, you know. The story is called Us and Them. And it was about a white police officer and his daughter. He's a widower. And it was also about, at that time, an African-American woman, single mom, and her son, you know, and she's working two jobs to take care of him and all that sort of stuff. But I really wanted to talk about the cycle of, here's another cycle, you know, of taking it to the streets, you know, and then the price paid, you know, Martin and Malcolm, you know, Angela Davis, on and on it goes, you know. We mentioned the L.A. riots as being her time and all that stuff. What I couldn't do was just let her think it all in her head. So I needed someone for her to talk to go back and forth with, and walked around letting it cook for a long time. And then, sister, she's got a sister. And she would know that Leslie was the woman's name. And she grew up in frustration and fear that the same thing would happen to her son. Her son is named after a former student of mine, my nickname for him, because he happened to start every sentence with the word, nah. So the character's name is Nah, you know, and he does the same thing that character does. So it's a tribute to my student. So I had to name this sister. Nothing come. And then out of nowhere, Calpurnia.
Mm.
Her name is Calpurnia. And I was like, well, there has to be a reason. Why Calpurnia? Leslie and Calpurnia? What kind of parents were doing this? So I researched Calpurnia. And it was like lightning hit me. Calpurnia was the name of Caesar's last wife. And it was she who begged him not to go to that meeting. Et tu, Brute, right?
Oh.
And this is nobody gets out unshattered in this story. And that's one of my points, you know. But at Calpurnia, you know, a sister relationship, you would support your sister, you would try and ease her frustrations, and you would share her fears. And occasionally a name, if you research the name that hits you, or if you research a bunch of names, you wind up
with something that's applicable.
The pieces fall together, and now that character that was just a story, it was a function of the story. I just needed someone for Leslie to complain to. But now she becomes a much stronger metaphor. So play.
Yeah.
These things happen, you know, as you're involved with your writing, with your process, as you're dealing with the this sucks part of the cycle. Also, you have these moments of discovery and research that is also part of the process. And that's how you pull from your personal life and then make it fresh. So it's not just memoir and it's not just autobiography.
Absolutely. And on that note. Hopefully this will be of help to all. Please let us know your thoughts, and also throw some questions at us, you know, so that we can tailor some more of our sessions to actually address some of your concerns, confusions, etc.
Considering the spoiler that I gave before about one of the documentaries you're working on, maybe some of those questions could be,
the history of
why
air.
Is there air?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is air made of?
And who is the
What's
air
What's the difference
too?
Between yes. hot air and fresh air?
Yeah. Oh,
how do God. You freshen air?
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm going to, hopefully you'll become a legionnaire. And on that note, I'll say, Chris, as always, an experience.
You're welcome, sir. Yes. As always, it is an honor to be in your presence, and it is an honor to be able to talk with the audience. Hopefully, we'll be able to engage a little more in some questions.
Yeah, please.
This is a thrill for us, so thank you for being here.
Absolutely, folks. Take care, live long and prosper, and all that other good stuff. Okay, take care.
Peace. Bye-bye.